Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This week on the Gary House podcast, I have got a good friend of mine, Mrs. Holly Stables, speaking with me. Oh, we've already spoken, to be honest. I'm not going to pull the wool over your eyes. Holly won't need too much of an introduction for the majority of you, especially in the running world or indeed the podcasting world. But let's have a look at some of her PBs. And I'm taking these off her Instagram bio. I'm not some complete stalker. Her 5K PB is 16 minutes, 10K, 34 minutes, half marathon, 74 minutes, marathon, 2 hours, 37. And she's also won a bronze medal at the Commonwealth Games and represented GB multiple times. That doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of her ultra running career, where I know she's won multiple races and set multiple course records across all kinds of distances, all kinds of terrain, which some of those I've managed to share with. A lot of the time she runs off into the distance from me too. She was also one of the presenters of Marathon Talk for many years, which is obviously probably the OG of running podcasts. And she's been on pretty much every other running podcast in the UK I can think of. But I wanted to get her on because she is a great friend of mine, both offline and online. And we speak about lots of things and we have some great laughs. But yeah, I wanted to dig a bit deeper into her role as the Essex Frontrunner manager for the UK, which I haven't heard her speak about too much before on the podcast, because everyone wants to know about her running career, and rightly so. So if you want to know more about her running, I would suggest one of the other podcasts, maybe. But we talk about training, life in general, and of course her role as the Essex Frontrunner manager for the UK. What she enjoys, what she doesn't enjoy so much about the role, and some good tips in case you're wanting to apply next year. So hopefully you enjoy our conversation. Holly is a great guest as always, so thank you Holly for coming on. Thanks for all the feedback so far on the show. Keep that coming. Comments on YouTube, ratings on your podcast or my Instagram. And here is Mrs. Holly Stables.
Holly Stables, welcome to the Gary House podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Very good. I'm in a newly darkened room, actually. I've just put a load of bin bags up on the windows. So
Nice. Your neighbours must get a bit of a wrong idea about you.
Well, I think they're quite happy if I put bin bags on my windows. I've been starting these podcasts with one question and one question only, and I want to know, why haven't you stopped running yet? Just to kick us off.
I'll be honest, it's because I've sold the cars, so I can only get around by running. So until I get another car, I'll keep on running.
How long have you...
Is that a fair enough answer?
Yeah, it is actually, yeah. It's more of a... Yeah, some people have taken it very seriously and some of us have been stumped with it. But rather than say, why did you start running, I've been using, why haven't you stopped yet?
I mean, yeah, if I'm giving you an honest answer, obviously I did sell the car, but we got a van, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, in terms of why haven't I stopped running, do you know what? It's something I ask myself daily when I get up in the morning. I would happily stop running, but there's some horrible thing inside me that that I have to go running. And I honestly, I've over the last couple of weeks, I've had a real bit of a loss of my running mojo, which I do get, but not very often, where I just can't actually, there's nothing inspiring about going out running. And for that, I always need a change of scenery.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really important to me. But I think I am totally like everyone else. Some days I don't want to go out running, but it's almost like I have to go out running. Also, because I'm old, if I stop for any period of time, I just find it really hard to start up again. It's like I'm an engine where the oil needs to keep being moving, you know, in the joints. If I stop, then I seize up and something happens bad.
When was the last time you had like a period where you couldn't run? Because I've known you for, well, a number of years now, and you're very consistent with training and everything now. But when was the last time that you had a like an extended period where you couldn't run for whatever reason?
Okay, so the last time where I couldn't run, so I stopped, was the last time I had a stress fracture. And that was just before UTMB, which was 2018. And I had to take, I'll be honest, I only took about a month off because I had to go out. I went out to the Alps because I was going out there to train for UTMB. So I had to cross train while I was out there and hike. But I had, you know, probably about 4 to 6 weeks off running, but I've had much longer periods off because of big injuries. And they've all been stress fractures or actual proper clean breaks.
Mm.
So yeah, that was the last time I took any sort of time off unless it was after a big race. So I have actually been, I was going to say lucky, but no, I've made big changes. So that didn't happen. And that's something of the way I'm going to have to continue training. And, you know, we can talk about that later or now if you want.
You got slower.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, that is, like you say, you've been lucky, but, like, I know how you train and everything now, so it's not, you're right, it's not luck at all. We will always pick up little injuries and stuff that might keep us out for a few days, but, like you say, stress factors is a culmination, isn't it? And, yeah, it's good that you can almost look back at that and think quite positively that hopefully won't happen again, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was my seventh fracture, which is not a badge of honour that I wear, you know, in a good way. It's something that I happily talk about because obviously throughout my career, I was getting fractures all the time or actual breaks. I mean, I actually broke my foot completely. I broke my heel completely. And that was all because of the way I trained and the way I looked after myself. And, you know, it took me a long time to learn that running constantly without doing any sort of strength training and not eating enough, running on roads and wearing stupid, like, thin shoes, you know, I think it's, you know, it's crazy that I thought that, you know, after I'd have a fracture, I would get over it and then I would almost continue in the same way. And it wasn't till that last time where I just thought, I just can't continue like this. It's heartbreaking. And if you get a fracture every year, every two a year, that's almost half your year out because not only have you got to take time out, it takes you a while to get back to where you were, you know, because no matter how hard you cross train, it's not running related. So it's so sad that it took me that long to really realise. And then when I did, it took me a long time to actually realize the benefits of what I was doing. I mean, I think it's a lot, you know, for a lot of endurance runners that we want to see results really quickly. And I wasn't seeing results really quickly by lifting, but after so many months, you know, this was months, and after 6 months and a year, that's when I saw the really big changes. And genuinely, touch wood, I've not had anything since then, which is amazing. And my bone density improved significantly.
So now, because I know you do the strength training, I know you eat really well, I know you train really well, but if you're like me, you will still get kind of, you might get a bit of foot pain, or I've got an old Achilles injury, so that might start to be a little bit niggly. Do you start to almost worry that it's going down that line, or do you have to kind of, like, sometimes I'll sit down and go, actually, no, I don't think it is going to end up in that old injury because I know how to manage it. It is just a bit of age coming in and the fact that I've trained hard for X amount of years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there is that age, isn't it? So, yeah, no, I definitely think that every time I get a niggle, I do think, oh, no, because all my niggles were always bone related. Mm. And the first thing I would always do is I would go and get an MRI scan. I know it's costly. I don't have private medical insurance, but I would go and pay for an MRI because I needed to know there and then. Most of the time it would be, you've got stress fracture. And he'd be like, great. Okay, I know what to do here. But I actually had a bit of a, but I'd be honest, I haven't actually had any niggles as such. I maybe have had some tightness, my back feels a bit tight, blah, blah, blah. But then I just back off. I do a bit of self. Again, I don't have massage. I don't do anything like that. I have physio when I need it, but that's it. But when I had a bit of a foot thing, and it was probably about a month before the arc, and I thought, oh, because I've broken my foot a couple of times. I was like, oh, is this what I think it is? I went through all the things in my head of, you know, what it could be, what it couldn't be. So I paid for an MRI scan, and it came back that I had a slight Morton's neuroma, which I've had for a long time, and it just flared up a little bit. So for me, I was like, great, I know what to do here, and it is something I have to manage. But apart from that, no, I mean, because I just haven't had that many niggles since 2018. I haven't had that. But yeah, the thought process will come in. Those thoughts will come in, the dark thoughts. You know, I'm going to have to take time off. I'm going to have to cross train. I'm okay with that. Back in the day, I really wasn't okay with that. It was like the be all and end all. It was like, if I have to cross train for 12 weeks again, I'm going to lose it, but I will do it.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm much more relaxed, you know, about cross training. I'll cross train, I'll take some days off. Whereas before, I would be in the gym twice a day, smashing it out on the spin bike or in the pool aqua jogging. Just took over my life, and it was just more time consuming than running.
Yeah. Now, the last kind of longer term injury I had, and it was after that dragon's back, say 6 weeks. I knew it was going to be 6 weeks before I could run, and I was on the Zwift, on the bike in the garage. And like you say, I was kind of doing 3-4 hour rides, but I didn't need to do that because I wouldn't be out exercising that much so soon after the dragon's back anyway. But it was just,
yeah
I get caught kind of thinking, well, I'm going to have to keep fit on this bike, not really enjoying it. And then something just switched. I was like, right, I'm just going to do an hour. And it was, and it was much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
It is weird. Like, when I've got the choice of cross training, I'm much happier doing it, especially these days. Whereas if it's forced upon me, I hate it. That kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I'm exactly the same. And also, like, walking to the gym, it's like, oh, can I be asked to do that? Whereas, you know, before I was massively motivated, because a lot of the time I had like big competitions or big races I had to do. So it's like, okay, I do need to train this hard. Well, within reason. Now, I'm just a bit kinder to myself, I think. I think I'm like, do you know what? I'm really tired today, so I'm just not going to run, or I'm not going to go and do that cross training session, that stair climber. I'm not going to do it because, you know, what's this for? I should be, I want to do it because I want to do it and because I'm happy. And that's what I was saying about with the mojo recently. I just haven't felt that motivated to go out to do any really long runs as well. I did a 17 miler the other day, and it felt like it went on and on and on and on. And I thought, how on earth did I run the arc? But that was the arc, and I've done that. That was great. But the 17 miler the other day, it was just like pulling teeth. And it was so slow. It was just awful. But you have those days, don't you?
Those longer runs that are further out from any kind of race that you're doing, I always think are a bit harder to mentally because, yeah, you just, it's not close enough to the race to think this is making a, this is a truly specific training session. But it is, you go out and you do it, and you might even be exactly the same amount, like time as it would if you're feeling great, like time-wise, it's just, yeah, it's just sometimes you do feel like that.
But then I guess.
Go on.
Sorry. No, I mean, I think the other thing is, well, you have to think about, like, why are you going out and doing these long runs? I mean, a long run doesn't have to be 17, 20 miles. Now, back in the day, it was 20 miles on a Sunday, a staple. That's what we always did. But it'd be a pretty quick pace. Now, if I go out for 20 miles, it takes me forever because I'm pissing about with the dog or, you know, trying to, you know, going over stiles, get chatting to someone who's got a dog, patting a pony. Whereas before, good Lord, I wouldn't dream of that. So it's very different. And, you know, a long run, it can be 90 minutes, and that could be as far as you get in that 90 minutes. I think you have to think about what you're doing it for. And if you're doing it because you feel that you have to do it, but you're not actually training for anything, then I think you need to perhaps rethink what it's all about.
Yeah. And plus, sometimes you have the odd day off or 2 days off. And if I have 2 days off, I know I get frustrated. And then, like you say, you need oiling kind of thing. And then you think, then you go out on the third day, say, you feel lethargic, but then you might have one of your best runs for weeks, and it reminds you that actually, yeah, that's because you've had 2 days rest or whatever.
Yeah, I've had more rest days in the last year than I've ever had. Mm. And also, the other thing is I can't take more than 2 days off because I get really badly constipated. I don't know about you.
How do
normal people who don't do any exercise do a poo? I mean, you have to keep moving, don't you? Some people don't poo for days, even weeks, do they? But I mean, you know, sorry we've slipped down this.
Well, no, until I started coaching, I didn't understand how many people had problem with their bowels and shitting and stuff like this, and that's all they want to talk about. It's like, how do you prevent yourself shitting for an hour? what do you do when you go to the supermarket? Kind of thing. So you can't leave the house without... It's just... I don't... For me, I get up, have a coffee, and that clears the pipes. So if I miss that slot, then there's trouble.
Or Shreddies.
Yeah. Yeah, there's trouble if I miss that slot. So people go on about their circadian rhythms and sleep and everything. I can sleep at any time. It's going to the toilet I need to go. But I don't...
Yeah, I'll bear that in mind when I'm pacing you.
Yeah. Did you see, like going sidetracking, did you see the Wilmslow Half Marathon at the weekend?
No, I didn't. I had a couple of friends racing it. Did someone have a bit of a toilet issue?
Yeah, this guy, and he's put it up on his Strava as a basically full pull of Radcliffe moment, but didn't stop, and it's all over the place. So he's PB'd.
Was he winning?
No, it's Wilmslow Half Marathon. He's just got a PB, but it's literally everywhere. And that's his...
What
it's like, I've never wanted a PB that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, I think you'd have to be, you know, I think I can understand why Radcliffe did it when you've got maybe like half a million at stake. But apart from that, no. I mean, I did have a bit of an issue when I did one of the Commonwealth Games. But my teammate who I was running with, she had a bit of an issue as well. And it was a lapped course. So we had to keep running past her shit, which was pretty gross. And she'd had a lot of beat it. This is when the beat it shots were around. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure some people still take it, but I never took it. Because again, it can cause havoc with you, especially when you're running in India and you've had it combined with lentils and stuff. And I think that was part of the problem. But anyway, yeah, that's a side story for another day, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, you get into coaching and then next thing you know, that's it. You're talking about, you either talk about food or, yeah, people shitting everywhere. going on to coaching, because I know, hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going to drag Pete, your better half, onto another podcast, and I want to talk about coaching and strength work in that podcast, and I'm going to drag him on out of wherever he is.
He did say that he doesn't do podcasts. I think he's done one and he hated it. And so he said the only one he would do would be yours, so you are very honoured. He hasn't done it yet, though, mind you, but he said he would.
Good. That'll be a good one. So we'll leave maybe we'll pick up the shit talk with Pete. He's there. What I wanted to ask you was your role with ASICS, how that started and what it looks like now with the front runners, because I know you've just gone through the selection process, and being in social media myself, I guess you would have to call that, it's always fascinated me how it's grown, number one, and two, how you became like the queen of it all, really.
I'm not sure about queen, I'm probably witch. They probably call me witch. So my journey with ASICS, you can say it either way, started in 2013, actually, because I was actually 10 years. I don't know that's gone. Before that, I was a sponsored athlete with Saucony, again, I don't know how you say it. So I was with them for maybe a couple of years, and my relationship with them ended, mainly because I just couldn't wear their shoes at the time. Bearing in mind, this is like 2012, so it's quite a while ago. And I was actually in Mallorca training for Comrades, because I had Comrades that summer. That was my first ultra. So I was in Mallorca training there. I love training in Mallorca. It's fantastic for road running and trail. Obviously, then I never ran trail. And so when I was there, my friend Simon Freeman rang me. I don't know if you know him. He's the he set up like the Wind and Freestack.
That's right,
he's a good friend of mine. Anyway, he rang me to say, I don't suppose you are free like in the next 2 days, because there's an opportunity in Chamonix to go out there and do some work with ASICS. They're doing this record attempt where they're putting two teams together, like of pro trail runners and then pro or semi-pro athletes from different types of sports, and they're going to, on the longest day of the year, to run around Mont Blanc, so UTMB route, within daylight hours. So what that is 13 hours something, on a stage, sort of stage thing, so it's continuous. And the guy Tim Don, the triathlete who was an ASICS ambassador at the time, had to pull out, and so they knew that I wasn't with Saucony anymore. So he contacted me and said, do you think you should go out? And I was like, well, oh god, I've never run on a trail like that. I've done cross country, but that was it. And so I was like, okay, I'll do it, because then I just thought, why not? So I went out to Chamonix, and it was all an amazing trip. I ended up running the leg from, if anyone knows it, from Notre Dame de la Gorge up to Col de Bonhomme. So it's basically just up and over like ice and stuff. So I was totally out of my comfort zone. And so from there, I had an amazing weekend. And from there, my relationship with ASICS started, and they said, would you like to be an athlete for ASICS? And I was like, okay, that'd be great. And ASICS was my first shoes I ever wore, actually, when I first started, like a lot of people. I was with them as an athlete.
Was that the first time you'd hit the trails, and then was that a view to, right, I'm going to run more trails then, or was it just that ASICS were there? Because back then, I'm trying to think, I can't remember ASICS being big on the like trail UTMB kind of scene back then, really.
No, I mean, to be fair though, the guy on the other team was Xavier Tevenand, who has won UTMB, CCC, TDS, all of them. I mean, that was the weird thing. Like, Xavi was like one of the best trail runners, and he was ASICS, which was, and I'll be honest, the trail stuff was pretty crap. And it was for quite a number of years, actually. So when I'm just trying to think, I think that was, no, so the year before, no, was it the same year? I can't remember. I'd been to Nepal. So I'd done my first sort of trail expedition. But that was the only thing. But I'd not really done any long trail races or anything, because it wasn't until after Comrades that I did Ultravasan, which was a 90K trail race in Sweden, which was ASICS as well. I mean, that was my first experience. Like, my first experience going to the Alps. I'd never been to Chamonix. I'd never done anything like that. And of course, if you've never been anywhere like that and you turn up there, it's like, whoa, this is amazing. But also slightly terrifying, because I'd never ran on stuff like that. I'd never done a race where you start at the bottom of a mountain and run to the top of it through rivers and over sort of glaciers and stuff. That was, not my thing, really. I did fall in love with it, but it was still out of my comfort zone, especially descending. Luckily, I didn't have to descend in that section. I just had to go up. That's where I started. And then I was a sponsored athlete, seeded athlete. So I wasn't paid, but I got kit. But I got, at the time, you get bonuses for races you do. And this is back in the day where it was all about editorial. So if you were in Athletics Weekly, you'd get paid for that. If you were in like the local papers, you got paid for it. Because I did Brighton Marathon and I came second, and there was like a picture of me. So in ASICS, where you get paid for that. So, I mean, I wasn't exactly going off and, paying off my mortgage. I was actually working for England Athletics at the time as well. So that's how that started. And then it wasn't until 2017 that the ASICS Frontrunner started in the UK. It started in 2010 in Germany. That's when it all started. And it started rolling out through different countries, but it was in Germany for quite a number of years. because it's actually a German guy with an A6 who started it up. Mm. And then in 2017, they advertised, they started doing the ambassadorship here. And they asked me if I'd be part of, like, it's called a pro team. So it was people like me, Hannah England, I can't remember the other people, Luke Gunn, people like that, who would be in the team, but we wouldn't sort of take part in the, how do I say this, the happy clappy cheerleading type stuff. So so I would just dip in when I was needed and be like, oh hi, yeah. And then the community manager who started, I don't think it had been that 6 months, basically was asked to leave. And they asked me if I would like to go on the international weekend. So every year there's an international meet that the A6 frontrunners can go to. Bearing in mind there's like 700 frontrunners now all over the world, and they can all go to this one meet. So like last year it was in Portugal. This year it was I was asked to, it was in Germany in somewhere, a little town called Neuss. And they said, would you like to go to this weekend? You can see what it's like to be amongst all the frontrunners, and then you can decide whether you want to be the community manager. I went on this weekend, and I got to be honest, I came back from that weekend, I was like, there's no fucking way I'm going to be a frontrunner manager. It is just, they are mental, a lot of them. So they're all just really over happy. They're all like different, mainly young at the time. So I felt quite old, bearing in mind I was probably 39. What was I, 40? I can't remember. There was a night race, and you could do a 5K or a 10K. Most of the team were drunk before the race started. And so I did the 5K. I'd already had a beer because I thought I'd better join in. Did the 5K. And then afterwards, we basically just drank beer constantly from then. Went to a nightclub, came home at 5 a.m. It was just, I was exhausted, utterly exhausted. But I came away from it and I was like, do I really want to do this? And I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And here I am. I'm still here. And it's evolved over the years, I will say. It's a very different team. It's a very different community than it was when it first started.
How many I think back then, I think, compared to how many you choose now?
So how many were in the team?
How many were in the team originally, like when you were being the manager, and then has it grown now?
Now
I'm assuming the application.
Yeah, it's about double the amount.
Yeah. And how many applications?
So this year we've got 50 now, and when I started, I think I had about 26 people. So in terms of management, it's much harder. It's, you know, like herding cats. But there's 50 of them in this country. In Germany, there's a lot more, and I think we're the second or third biggest country now. Like Italy's pretty big. Germany's the biggest team because that's the founding team. Although they cut a lot of people. And applications, it varies. I mean, I think the biggest year we got 5,000 applications, and I go through those personally. You can imagine how long that takes. And also back in the day, they used to ask them about 50,000 questions. Like, what the, can I swear on this?
Yeah.
So it's like, what the fuck am I going to, how am I going to go through all of that? Please just make the questions shorter. It's just insane. And some of the questions used to be things like, what's your PBs? And because it was called a front runner, and I think people got confused that you had to be fast.
Yeah.
And that was the whole aim when it first started, which I think wasn't good. I mean, I think, like I said, the whole community has changed. It's not about being a front runner. Yeah, we have like ex-Olympians in our team, but we also have,
so it is important to have people like that in there, I think, and people that are doing well and pushing things, just so it pushes the others on and inspires the others. It doesn't mean you can't have front runners on or back runners, does it? I don't think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I think the whole point of the team, and the team that I've wanted to make over the years, is I definitely felt that when I joined that the team was very, it was very the same. I felt that, you know, there's all sorts of runners out there now, especially now, anyone runs. And I thought that I wanted every runner to be able to look at the team and say, there's someone like me there.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. That doesn't have to be just like what they look like. What I want it to be like their age, their background, the pace they run, the sort of stuff they run. Like some people in the team never run on the road. Some people only run five park runs. Some people do track, some people do ultra. We've got the oldest member of the team is 62. Yeah, we could have someone older, and that's something I'm working on. This year, I wanted to get younger people on, because when I first joined, I was the oldest person on the team at 39, which is not old, I don't think. So my aim was to get older people, especially older women, because I think that was something we weren't showing. It was younger girls, and for me, that's not me. So we got some amazing older ladies, mature ladies in the team. And so this year I realised that actually, bloody hell, we're all a bit old now. So this year I wanted to try and find some under 25s. I tell you what, that was actually quite hard. Mm. So many. I mean, I must say, I think the great thing, we've obviously done a good job, because this year we had a lot of older, like over 40s, a lot of over 40s applying. But I think there's a lot of over 40 people running now, which is great. And also we had an awful lot of Muslim women apply, which again was amazing, because we didn't have any Muslim women or men in the team. And I felt that was not good. So taking on like Sadia and Taz and Samina has been a real asset to the team. And they've really encouraged women to apply, which is great.
And what does applying for and being, you know, like, because I've seen people apply for the front runners and things like this, but what does it mean if I was to sign up for the front runner? What are they committing to, in other words? And what kind of support do they get? Is it just a community of you all, or is it kind of, are they leading runs? I've got no clue, so you tell me.
So they're signing up to a lifetime of WhatsApp groups,
I'll
tell you that now.
Yeah.
Oh my god! I mean, if I never have a WhatsApp,
is that why you've got four burners every time I see you? Couple of burners.
There's a girl, Becca. I'm going to tell her. I'm going to out her here. Becca is obsessed with WhatsApp. She'll have a WhatsApp group about the WhatsApp group about that WhatsApp group. It's just every event we have to have WhatsApp groups for that. Or, you know, it's just ridiculous. But they seem to love it. You know, you're signing up to. You're going to be a brand ambassador, and that's the other thing. It's like, we've had people apply who just want to, I guess, get free kit, or I don't know. But you have to actually, there's no point signing up to these or trying to join an ambassador group if you don't actually like the product, because it's like, I completely get, like, so the whole Vaporfly thing, when that came out, and we lost some of the athletes, the faster athletes, because they wanted to wear those shoes. I completely get it. It was like hard for me, because I wanted to wear them, but you know, you can't race in them. So I completely get that. But now we've obviously got the best fast shoe out there, so we're winning. But you need to be able to actually like to wear the product, because you are going to be exclusive to the brand. When you join, you get loads of kit. You get loads of shoes. Honestly, by the end of the year, you'll be sick to death of the kit. You get race bibs for all the ASICS races globally. We've just signed with Ultra X, actually, in the UK, which is great. So they get to do those races, which saves you a few pennies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We have meets every year, which is great. So obviously we've got one coming up. This is all paid for, and you come to the meets, you'll get to listen to me waffle on for a bit, and then we produce. I bet they can't wait for this weekend.
Just about to apply, and then
yeah, exactly. Like, the content. It's all about producing content as well. So we get loads of photos, we make reels, we get videos. That's the other thing I think has changed over ASICS, which I think is amazing. I think it's great compared to other brands, from what I can see. So ASICS, the EMEA, will use ASICS front runners for their campaigns, for their shoe launches, for their you'll go into a store and you could see you'll see a front runner in the store as a picture. You know, they've gone away from using sports models, totally unrelatable people. They do use obviously pro athletes, ASICS pro athletes, but I'll be honest, they're using more and more of the front runners because they're the people that are like us. And I love that. I think it's really good. I think that's a great thing that ASICS are doing. So, like, you know, all of the Superblast campaign that just came out had Sadia from our team. You know, who'd have thought that you'd have had a Muslim woman wearing a hijab running in Superblast through the streets of London? And it's cool. So stuff like that. Or Jamie was the face of the Front Runner campaign this year. And Jamie is a Blade Runner. So I think that A6 do a really good job in that respect. And the Front Runners get to be involved. They get so many opportunities to, like, we've got one of our Front Runners at the moment in Japan. And she's doing some trail shoots on Mount Fuji. She joined the team last year. She never expected that to happen. We've had Sean just come back from Italy. She just did an amazing event out there. So they all get opportunities to take part in this. And like I said, it is a community. And people can put as much into that as they like or as little. We have some people who are so invested in A6 Front Runner, it's terrifying. And then we have others who just sit on the sidelines a little bit and go dip in and out. And I completely understand that as well. So it's, and they're not forced to do anything like some people might believe. I mean, I don't go around forcing them to do things.
And they sign up for a year.
And
for a year, is that right?
No.
Is it just ongoing?
Indefinitely. Yeah. You don't have to re-sign every year. They have to sign an ambassador's agreement, which is yearly. Well, it's actually ongoing. Mm. So they only leave.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Unless I boot them off, and they'd have to do something pretty bad. Or it just comes to a natural end. We lost an athlete to be we've managed to, Grace has gone on to be like a seeded athlete, which is great. So that makes me happy. Yeah. And then other people, Harry's just moved to New Zealand and he's decided he wants to stay there. Well, that's great. But he'll be working with ASICS New Zealand. So we've got people who've been in the team since 2017. Dear God, I wish they weren't here, but they're still there.
Is that Pete?
Don't listen. Pete joined in, I can't remember, 2018 actually. He's been here quite a long time. Yeah, I mean, he does need to move on. He doesn't do much.
What demographic were you trying to fill when you signed him up?
I was looking for a lump, a running lump. It was always about stories. We always wanted a story as well, yeah. Like someone who had something interesting. Right? So Sean, who's transgender, Sean, I knew when she was Simon. And then she contacted me and we raced against each other, yeah. And said, hi, you probably don't remember me. And that was an amazing story. And Sean is happy to tell her story to anyone who will listen, which is like gold dust. Her story is amazing. And Pete's story was amazing. You know, the fact that he was a powerlifter who started ultra running. And you don't see many 110 kilo guys as he was at the time doing, he did the Wanner, which was 80 something miles. Mm. I mean, he was just inside the cutoff. Don't tell him that. But he did it. So it's stories like that, isn't it? And and those are the things that we found hard this year. We didn't have many stories as such. We had a lot of people applying who just like running, which is great.
Yeah.
The last couple of years we sort of have a story. It's sort of quite a theme. So I think last year, I think it was maybe because of COVID or something, it was all about children and families on their applications, which is fine. And then the year before it was always about food, plates of food. You know, when you go on someone's Instagram and it's just plates of food. It's like, oh my God, what? Or it's just pictures of how far they ran on Strava or their watch. This tells me nothing about you.
What's the weirdest application you think you've had without dropping anyone in it?
We've had some funny ones. I mean, we had one a couple of years ago, which I thought was bloody funny. this guy applied and said, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said he wanted to have breakfast with Pete in the morning. I was like, fair dues, but he wasn't interested in anything else. I was like, you probably just want to slip into his DMs about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you've got 50 of them. Yeah, I think it's really good. Like, obviously, I don't know too much about it, but just with social media now, Instagram especially, either someone will follow me or speak to me, and I think, oh, they look interesting. And quite often, it's like, oh, they're a front runner kind of thing. And like you say, you can quite quickly see their story because of the way that they use their social media. It's not just a picture of a shoe or leg every single photo or whatever. I'm assuming that is you and the team doing quite a good job, I guess, because I imagine it can be quite hard because you're on social media, but you're also the Asics front runner, like top picker, for want of a better word. And so I'm assuming a lot of the time people you know are applying and things like this, and it can be quite difficult, or people hump maybe because, yeah, they think that they should, or they're getting overlooked when it's just a genuine process, isn't it? And it is, although it is a choice, but it's not, it is just, it's just fun at the end of the day, isn't it? It's not something to get too angry about, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, genuinely, we have in the past had some public following afterwards. And, you know, I do always think, I want to say, like, good, you know, we've had 5,000 applications and I've got like 5 places. Mm-hmm. You know, some of you are not going to get in. I'm really sorry. And I do try and give people feedback afterwards, although it's really hard when you have like thousands of people asking for feedback. It's just, look, I'll say this now, like I'll say every year we do have a different sort of criteria that they're looking for. So this year it was young, under 25s.
Yeah.
And I did say that actually in some of my stories. And then other years we were like, we need to look for older people, we need to look for trial runners, or we need to look for people based in like locations as well. We might be really sparse in locations. You know, so it's got nothing personally. And then what I'll quite often do, so I have a long short list. So this year I had about 14 people on it. And every year, most likely that person on that shortlist, if they apply again, quite often gets in. So Alana, who got in this year, has applied every year since applications. And she's been on my shortlist several times. Because of the criteria, she hasn't got in. She got in this year. I think Dion had applied, this was his third or fourth year. So I say to people, don't give up. And also, don't get shitty if you don't get in. Because it's... some of the people as well who've been really gracious as well and, you know, good about it, because it is really hard for me. And I will say it's not just me putting people in. I will get together the people I think that are great. Then I present them to the central team, who are the European team, and then they say, or the UK team, they'll say, oh, actually, that person we think we prefer, or that person. So, you know, it's not just down to me. So I don't want it to be a big witch hunt about me. But so it is hard. Yeah, so it is hard to please everyone. And I hope I do a good job. I think every year I'm always like, I think they're great. I think they're going to really work. And pretty much all the time they do. We've had a few issues before, but most of the time everyone's really, really good. And like you say, it is hard to please everyone. And we're not allowed to say how many people we're taking on every year. I think sometimes if we could just say, do you know what? There's only 5. Like some countries have only taken on 2 people, you know, and it's so hard. It's like a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, especially when, because the nature of it, you have to kind of advertise it and kind of make a big fact that it's opening for entries and then a couple of people get added. I guess it's quite tough, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is really tough. And going back to what you saying about the front runners posting stuff, I mean, they, again, there's no request for them to do like so many posts a week or a month, anything like that. We just like them to post about certain campaigns. So like the Nimbus 25, but most of the, you know, a lot of the team get the shoe. And it's, we just like them to do like an unboxing, you know, it'd be like if you were gifted a shoe, you do an unboxing story or whatever, and or a reel. I mean, some of them are amazing at producing content. I'm absolute garbage at it, so I tend to leave it to them. You know, I'm great at a dog picture or something, or, you know, Pete, I'm really lucky that Pete's a photographer, so I get some good content with that, but I'm just no good at doing, you know, the fancy stuff. So that's what they do, and they love it.
Part and part love it these days, isn't it? You know, like when,
yeah,
like, yeah.
Let's be honest.
I enjoy taking the piss out of things like that, but it's not from a place when it's an unboxing, because I've taken the mick out of those unboxing videos. It's not like I've got a vendetta against it. I just think it's quite funny for me, quite funny at the time. And then, but yeah, you can, like with content creation these days, some of the kind of, yeah, literally some of the unboxing videos are literally like you could watch them all day kind of thing. You find yourself in a black hole of unboxing videos because of the way it's, I know how long it takes to do one of my shitty ones. So when you see some of them, they must have put some time and effort into it. At least you can appreciate that.
I mean, some of the team are just so good at it. And I just think, wow, how did you do that? And then some of them are just hilarious at it, but they've tried to be serious. And that's the best. Those are the best ones, you know? Like we have Karen, who is, she was a mature member of the team. I love Karen. Running Like a Wrinkly is her Instagram handle. But she does loads of amazing content, but some of her stuff is hilarious. I mean, she does stuff like, so she sent us, I'm sure she won't mind me saying, but it is really funny. She lives in the New Forest, so she does a lot of stuff like in the woods. And she has done quite a few times where she's set up her camera and she's been running along and stuff. And then she sent us one the other day where she'd forgotten where her camera was, her phone. And so she's just like running up and down, like looking. And then it's just brilliant. And then she finally finds it. It's like 10 minutes of footage of her trying to panic and running around and, you know, hiding behind trees and stuff. And it's supposed to be serious, but it's bloody funny. So stuff like that, I think, is gold.
I also think once you're invested in, say you're with ASICS as a frontrunner or whatever, and you're creating content, I think you can be as creative with it and as like full on with it as you want, because like you're signed up to them really then, aren't you? It's not like you're you're not having a different brand every week kind of thing. That doesn't sit as well with me. If it's all ASICS and you can be any shape, size, kind of ability as a runner, if you're an ASICS front runner or one of the other teams or whatever, an ambassador for anyone, like, I just think you should be at least like invested in that brand for the amount of time that they're supporting you, really.
Yeah, and I can tell in the team, the ones who aren't really that invested, I mean, genuinely, I would say probably 90% of the team spend all of their spare money on ASICS stuff, extra stuff. I mean, they get a discount code, which is a big discount code, but they'll constantly be buying on the WhatsApp groups, the whole like WhatsApp group on what they bought today. They have far more kit than I have, and shoes. They love it so much. And that's got nothing to do with me. I'm not making them do that, or, you know, none of us are making them do that. They do it because they genuinely love it. And that's great. And that's what a brand ambassador is about. It's about actually loving the kit and the shoes and the brand and the sort of philosophy behind it. So I think that's why they do such a good job.
So if you want to be an ASICS frontrunner next year, go out and buy a load of ASICS kit and just keep wearing it. That's what Holly's saying.
I mean, some people do apply.
It's quite funny. Pictures quick.
Seriously, I mean, that is a question we get. It's like, oh yeah, but what if I have worn Nike in the past? It's like, fine, that's fine. I've worn Nike in the past. It's absolutely no problem. But if you've like all your pictures before, you were dressed head to toe in Hoka or something, and you've got an unboxing thing of Hoka the month before, and then suddenly your last three pictures might be in your old ASICS stuff, it is sort of obvious. But do you know what I mean? I think, you know, I'm not expecting people to apply who just have like, who sleep in ASICS pajamas.
No,
because I don't.
So going on that, what do you think is what do you think the best part of social media is, and what do you think the worst part is? Start with the best.
There's just more. I can't even
you because I think like because I've spent enough time with you to know that although like we both work, I guess, in the online space, yeah. But when I'm not on Instagram, I'm not scrolling endlessly kind of thing. It is a work thing. I find it like it's just essential for work. And obviously I'm an online coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be ridiculous if you didn't kind of have an online presence, I always think. Because I see so many coaches moaning about the fact that, oh, I'm not going to be on social media all day or whatever. But then they're the ones that don't have any clients, basically.
And they expect people to come to them.
Yeah. And because I have spent time with you, I know that you're not the kind of person to be constantly scrolling on your phone. So how do you balance the fact that, yes, you work within social media, but at the same time, you don't get, you're not dragged into the videos all day, unless obviously you're watching mine.
No, you're on mute. So if I'll be honest, there's a lot of the time where I just want to turn off all my social media stuff because that's the bad thing. I'll get to the bad thing in a minute. I think the good thing about it, genuinely, is I've met people, I've met you, because I listened to you on a podcast, but that was through, I guess, so that's social media, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've seen you on, it was the Rum Boy, what are they called? What are they called? I've forgotten them. The Fat Boy Running. What are they called?
Say Fat Boy Running.
Sorry, boys. I listened to you on there, and I'll be honest, to start with, I was like, oh, he really is going to piss me off. He's going to talk shit. He's going to talk about rollers and stuff like that. And then when you started talking about stuff like that and dissing it and saying and talking stuff, I sort of agree with it. I was like, oh, God, I actually really like him. And then, so I think I just sort of slipped into your DMs or something. I can't remember. I didn't send you any pictures or anything, so don't worry about that. So I think meeting people...
That was after running past me at the last kilometre of Barcelona Marathon, though, wasn't it?
I didn't know you were there. Honestly, if I had, I'd have tapped you on the bum.
Yeah.
So sort of meeting people, like genuine, like friends, I would say now, meeting people, that's been really, really good. And also, although I have to say, like, I don't just, believe it or not, follow runners on Instagram.
No.
I love like van people. I've got this, my separate, my other life, like van lifers, because I'm massively into YouTube. I love YouTube. And I have a sort of almost like a little group of community friends that I've got to know through that, who people who live in vans. So I don't really, for me, I don't really watch running stuff. So for that, that's made me open up to a different sort of community. So that's the good thing. And obviously, like you say, for me, it's part of my work. Not that I really advertise for online coaching, because we don't really have many online coaching clients, because we don't really want them. But definitely our business for our e-guides. God, I'm not selling myself, am I? E-guides, etc., and programs. Yes, we use Instagram. That's the only form of advertising we do. So those are the good sides of it, I think. And also just seeing people accomplish great things. I think that's great, genuinely, if that's what they're doing.
But you choose. Ultimately, you choose. People moan about the algorithm and who they see and all that kind of stuff, but you choose your own algorithm to a certain extent, kind of thing, don't you? So, like, people...
I
don't use it for work. Well, I do. I put my videos up there for work, but it's literally, I don't know what I'm doing with TikTok. I don't want to know about TikTok. But the few people that I do follow, I think I follow two runners and the rest are like you say, in other interests that have got golf, football, music. So my kind of, they call it the For You page or whatever on TikTok, it's actually great. Their algorithm's great because it's showing me stuff that it's like the football team that I support. It's the DJs that I like. It is the golfers that I like, that kind of thing. So for me, actually, that's quite a fun experience. I'm not sat there watching some dickhead like me dancing or something. It's literally just built around my interests, a bit like you're saying with YouTube. The same as like my YouTube is on the telly, and you log in, it's my profile, and it's just suggesting the things that I actually like. Instagram's a little bit different, I guess, because over time I always think I've maybe you've followed way too many people, or and you'll know this, like my account's gone bigger in the last few months, and I genuinely don't know majority of the people are following me, and I've found that I've missed interesting ones, whether they've commented or sent me a message kind of thing. And then I've started speaking to them. They've been following me for months, and they're actually either interesting or fun, and I've completely missed it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously most of yours are bots, so they're not really any people anyway, are they? But
it did cost me $99 for those followers.
Wow, 99. I could have given you a cheaper deal. Much cheaper deal, got there. No, I mean, yeah, you're following. I mean, you've got a lot of American followers now, haven't you, I think?
Yeah.
It seems that way.
20% of the new followers, I'll show you another time, but yeah, 20% of the new followers are American, about, well, sorry, 25 are American or Canadian.
Wow.
Which is...
And they love your humour.
Some do, some don't. Yeah. Or some get
I've noticed that as well.
Some get drawn in by one video and then they quickly leave. Yeah. So
I think that you're right. And I think the negative side of it is, yeah, I mean, I've actually unfollowed a lot of people. It sounds awful, but it's mainly because it's nothing personal. Although that's the other weird thing. You know, you get messages from people saying, well, I'm really sorry that you've unfollowed me.
Yeah.
Number one, how do you know that? Because you must have like one of these apps, which I don't have. I don't know who follows me, unfollows me. I don't really care. But they, you know, they'll message you and it's like really, they take it really personally. And I'm just like, oh, you know, why do I have to explain myself for a start? And then, I follow people who I feel like I know to a certain extent. I don't want to, it's like on Facebook, if people try and be friends with me on Facebook, I won't be friends with them unless I know them. That's separate. And I don't really do anything on Facebook anyway. I do my ASIC stuff, but that's it.
Mm.
But I think the biggest issue, I think, with Instagram or any sort of social media is just comparison. People just compare themselves constantly to other people, no matter what they say. And the, you know, the little monkey on your shoulder starts telling you stuff, or the, you know, the jealousy comes out. And it's the worst thing. I mean, the worst thing is people who put up all their every day. I do it sometimes. Every day they put up their split times and like what they've done on the track, or, you know, how much, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I find stuff like that just annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, I did it the weekend because I was pleased myself, but it's not really, occasionally I'll do it, but it's when they do it every bloody day.
Yeah, I think it's different, isn't it? But you can quite quickly tell if it's someone, you know, like some people genuinely use it almost like accountability for themselves, whereas some, the ones that I don't like, well, not don't like, I don't care, but, you know, almost like the humble...
They're doing it show off.
Yeah, the humble brag versions of it all, that's the ones that they're the ones that grate more than anything.
We know a few of those, don't we?
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I think that Instagram is it's a funny old place, really, isn't it? And it's come a long way since pretty pictures.
Yeah, and like I have a really positive relationship with Instagram. I think I enjoy it because I've got quite a good interactive community of people that ask me questions and stuff. I enjoy making the content. I think it would be completely different if I was just, if it wasn't my job, essentially, and it wasn't part of my business, I guess.
Well, would you do it? Would you actually be on Instagram?
Yeah, I always think that. I'm not 100% sure, because when I'm not working, I'm not on it, really. Yeah, so I think I would, because I've still got that. I'm still enough of a bit of a, like, narcissist to put my own stuff up there. Definitely. But I think just because I've done it for so long as a coach or as a whatever, I was doing, like 10 years ago, I was Gary House PT. I had a PT page and all that kind of thing on Facebook. So it's always been just posting for work, essentially. And then, but what I like is the stories and that kind of side of things, I guess. So I follow a couple of friends and I'll watch their stories and that's kind of it. Yeah. So, because I feel like I'm catching up with people, or like I'll see you a couple of times a year. I've only known you a number of years, but I see you a couple of times a year. But again, I feel like we know each other more because we follow each other on Instagram, maybe. Yeah. And I don't do that with everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You'll find people that you just instantly click with, or you can get on with. That is the good part. And then the downsides are either... Yeah, I think just knowing when to take yourself away from it, maybe to a certain point. But again, and the comparison thing, you've just got to really, it's a bit of a switch, isn't it? I'm not actually someone that would say you should stop comparing yourself completely, because it's just human nature, isn't it? If you're not comparing yourself on Instagram, you'll be comparing yourself on Strava or whatever.
well, that's why I'm not on Strava, to be honest, but... I think that the comparing thing is good. Yeah, you're right. It's good to a certain extent. But I think the other thing is how you choose your mindset when you're comparing and when you're looking at other people's stuff. So I chose a while ago to, although it still slips in, I chose to look at people and see them doing things that maybe I would love to do or I wish I was doing, and look at it and go, oh, fucking, that's great for them. I really want to like turn it around and be really happy, like cheerleader, that's an awful word, but to turn, you know, turn around and say that, you know, that's brilliant. I really, you know, I think that's great. They definitely deserve that. Or, you know, what a great time they must be having. Instead of just going, oh, why are they doing that? Blah, blah, blah. And I think that's unfortunately what a lot of people do. And, you know, as it's like, you know, that's why I love watching, genuinely love watching your reels and your stories, because they just make me laugh. And so therefore, that's a good thing. You know, there's lots of people that I like following their stories. I'm not so bothered about maybe their grid, but their stories are just bloody funny. So it just, yeah. I love that. Yeah. So you take out what you put in and you take out what you want. I mean, I'll be honest as well, at the moment, I'm a little bit bored with Instagram. I've got really nothing to post about. Hopefully in a few weeks' time I will. But, you know, so don't post then, you know? Yeah. I don't, you know, people feel they have to post constantly. You don't have to.
No. You can't all have, like, endless creativity.
Perfect, amazing lives. Yeah.
Right, before we wrap up, I just want to touch on, because I know this is coming up, travel plans in the next month or so and race plans coming up. So travel plans, you're off in the van, aren't you?
No,
you're not off in the van first.
We are in the van in the summer.
That's right.
No,
Nepal.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to drive the van to Nepal. It would take me a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we fly out. What day is it? Is it Tuesday? Yeah.
Yeah.
Less than 2 weeks. So a week on Monday, we fly out to Nepal. This will be my 8th time. I love the place, and this will be Pete's first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, 8th time. Yeah. So I went out in, so yeah, it was 2012, my first time I went, very end of 2012, I decided to go. That was my first experience of running on trails. I know, I'll go to the Himalayas,
yeah.
Run up loads of mountains. So I'm heading back there, and we're going to do, we were going to do Annapurna, but the Nepalese tourist board have decided, I don't know if you've seen it, decided to put in a new law where independent travellers cannot trek independently anymore. You have to have a guide. Which doesn't work for us because we're running, and I don't think there's any guides that could keep up with us anyway. I don't think so. And also, the whole place is independent.
Can't Pete pass for sure?
Yeah, I mean, if, yeah, he would be able to carry a lot of kit.
It's a donkey.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to, the great thing at the moment is that restriction does not apply to the Khumbu region, so the Everest region. So we're going to go and actually do, it slightly backfired on Pete, bless him. We're going to do like a much tougher route. It's called the Three Passes, which is something I've always wanted to do. It's part of Everest route, which I've done, but you go over the Three Passes. So it's three passes that are over 5,300 metres. The highest one's 5,500. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, who knows what's going to happen for Pete, because he's never been to that altitude before. But we're going to take it pretty slow. We've got nearly 3 weeks. So. We're doing that. Then we come back.
If you never thought about doing, those trips on YouTube, seeing as you love YouTube,
and what you mean, videoing it?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because he's just got a gimbal, because he started doing some filming for the bodybuilders in our gym, which is pretty cool for a company. Mm. So he started working doing some stuff for them. So he is doing some videography. But the thing is, it's carrying it all, so we wouldn't be able to run. I mean, if we, we just wouldn't be able to run with that camera. That's the biggest, he's taking the camera, but we're going to have to leave it in Kathmandu, which is really gutting, because honestly, the scenes there, as you can imagine, are just insane. And again, YouTube has been amazing, because I've been just putting in three passes, and I can basically see the whole route from people who have done the route. In fact, Amelia Boone, I don't know if you know Amelia Boone.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend, Ryan Doozer, he is an amazing, he has amazing YouTubes, and he did the whole three passes and videoed it, and it was amazing. And so that's been so useful, you know? Have a look at that. He's done some great trips. So So we're going to do that. We'll have our phones, these few shitty photos.
Yeah.
And then we fly back in, and then literally like a week later, this could be a really bad idea, but a week, or it could be amazing.
Yeah.
We do the UTS 50.
Altitude camp.
So actually that's what I'm doing at the moment training wise, because I think a lot of people are asking like, what am I doing? I've done a whole marathon block of training.
Yeah.
So like some quite long, hard stuff. And then I'm going to literally stop, go to Nepal, and then spend 3 weeks high altitude bumbling along without any speed work. So I guess it's sort of specific training for getting closer. Then I'll come back, have a week to decompress, whatever, and then go up to UTS. It could go really well. It could go horribly wrong. I think so the last time I did the three peaks.
If you're even remotely marathon fit for that, because it's not technical at all now. It's just...
Is it not?
No, not the 50K. So, yeah, you'd be good on that, I think.
I mean, there's some really good fast girls going to be there, so I'm under no illusion. And, you know, I'm probably the oldest person trying to... they put out on Instagram, like, the top women.
Yeah.
And there's 30 elite women doing, or maybe even more, I think, doing the 50. Mm. And I'm ranked sixth. Which is not bad for me, really. Yeah. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, yeah. I mean, I'd love to get on top three, but that's going to be a very, very, very tough ask for me, I think. And then that's to be honest, that's all I've got planned at the moment. It depends what happens at UTS, because I really wanted to do OCC.
That's right. Yeah.
But they did me up like a kipper, didn't they? Because I thought after TDS I'd get a stone, but turns out running the hardest route in UTMB gets you fuck all.
Yeah.
So
I know some people that were getting like 7 and 8 stones and still didn't get entries last year. So
yeah. Really?
God knows what's going on. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, so if you've got any ideas of what I should do, let me know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, after UTS, we'll drag Pete on and we'll talk. I want to talk more about the strength training and the concurrent training and stuff like that, hopefully.
Yeah, you should talk about that. And also you should ask him about what he wants to do later this year, because he's got a bit of a lofty plan of what he would like to do. I'm going to tell you, because no one's listening. He wants to run sub 3 hours for a marathon, 2:59:59. And whether that would be, I've got a visitor here, whether that would be, he's like a person. Whether that would be this year, he's cleaning his balls now. This year or next year, but
for those just listening,
he ran like 3:30 something. Oh yeah, sorry, it's the dog. So we'll see. We'll see if he can do it or not.
Where's he going to go for that? Did you say?
We haven't decided yet. We're looking at races, because I looked at Valencia, but I thought, you know what, I don't want, it's all a bit, Valencia's all a bit big and could be a bit too much, you know. But there's actually, if anyone wants to message me, but I found a few that we need at the end of the year. We need it as late as possible. We need all the time we can get. I was actually looking at San Sebastian, if you know anything about that. I know San Sebastian, it's a great place, great tapas. And it's really flat.
When is that?
It's just whether the weather would be all right. It's November, end of November. Mm. There's also Nice.
Yeah.
There's
one in December.
Actually, there's Pisa, which I've done, but that's December.
Yeah.
There's Pisa in December, which is really flat.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah, so we'll just sort of decide. And also, I want one where we can enter a bit later. Like, whole Valencia is really expensive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like a whole thing. And I'd rather, I think, if we're going to go for it, do something a little bit more, maybe lower key. So I think that's probably what we'll do. I don't know. I presume I'm probably going to be pacing in, so we'll see.
I did Malta, and I've only done 4 marathons. I did Malta, and that has a long downhill section. So.
I was going to say, isn't that net downhill? I thought.
I think it is. It's a very weird race, because there's lots of downhill, but there's lots of short uphills, and even towards the end, end up going over like motorway overpasses and stuff, which don't register on a profile. But when you're 24 miles in, you're like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah. That's going to really like mess with your energy systems as well, isn't it? It's probably not so good.
And even at sub 3 hours, it'll be on his own as well. It's just not that enjoyable. Yeah.
No, I think there's plenty of options. We'll have a look, but we definitely need... There's lots sort of around October, but that's going to be too early, I think.
Mm.
So I think if we can find something late November, it's all about weather, isn't it? But then, you know, April races are going to be... They're getting too hot now. And September races are really hot. So, and he hates the heat. I mean, he is basically 90% Viking.
Mm.
So if we can do it sort of in Iceland, he'd prefer that.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Good. Right, I will let you go and attend to the hound then, I think.
What? Yeah, it's walkie's time, you know. He's giving me the eye.
Right then. Thank you, Holly. Have a great trip. I'll obviously speak to you along the way. I want constant updates now, seeing as I know where you're going. And I will, we will drag Pete on after the UTS then, hopefully.
Yeah, that'd be great. And he is like a wealth of knowledge. He just struggles sharing it.
No, I think
he needs to share it.
That's why I'll drag it out of him, basically.
Grill him.
He can't say no to me. Yeah. Thank you very much. And I will speak
to you
soon, Holly. Where can we find you all? Sorry. I mean, I always assume that everyone knows you, but what was your Instagram stuff and website?
So the Instagram it's the same actually. It's rushedbynature .com for the website. And then for Instagram it's rushedbynature. That's it, I think.
And the same website the where you can get all the plans and session books and stuff like
that. Yeah. So the website, we have e-guides on there. And then we also have concurrent training plans on there as well. And we've got a discount at the moment, 20% off.
Any foam rolling plans?
No, we use those to... Well, we did use it for holding the door open, but I think we burnt it in the end because we ran out of logs.
Okay. Right, on that note, I will leave you to it. Don't forget to start...
Lovely to see you.
Get your DMs in early for the front runners next year. Start messaging Holly now, I reckon.
No.
Okay, bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks, Gary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.